Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart.
Folks, one more day. We are finally on the brink of the Ohio State season opener, and that means it is a Freaky Friday on the beat. Bold predictions are back in Ohio State and Texas. It's just a little bit more than 24 hours away, right, Berm? I'm just nailing the math.
A little bit more. Did you do that when you were a kid? Be like, three more sleeps till Christmas.
You know what? I'd actually never heard that until I started covering Wyoming football. And the coach then, Joe Glenn, would be like, 2 days in a wake-up. And I was like, I don't, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's a weird way to say it.
I never heard it that way. Yeah. Anyway, welcome to the beat, the Austin and Berm Show. He is Berm. I am Austin Warden. I got to tell you, full disclosure, it is Thursday on campus. We are down by the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. We took a little stroll down by the horseshoe. Well, not a stroll because you're still banged up on the availability report.
Yeah, but man, that's a lot of stuff happening down there.
This campus is already, dare I say,
buzzing.
Buzzing. Mm. I think that's the word for
with
it.
With one more wake up to go.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that we're this close. We're going to have a busy Friday and then obviously a jam-packed Saturday. We'll get into all of that as we roll along after some bold predictions. We also have interviews with not one but two Ohio State captains on this Freaky Friday edition. So we have Austin Serveld and Brandon Innes with a couple conversations with those captains. We'll talk about their importance and their role in this game and some of their thoughts about what it was like to be named a captain. Different for both of them, so it's pretty interesting with an Ohio kid and Florida wide receiver. But Berm, like, so close now, and I know that we've said, oh, you can lose this game, and you know the stakes are different. It's an isolated one. It's a one-off. Like, now that you're this close, and you might have already felt this way. Maybe a lot of America already did too. Like, number one versus number two is really cool, and it's going to be awesome to cover it. And we can worry about what happens after win or lose for Ohio State. I think they're going to win. Jump to the end of that. Like, it is a very cool thing to have as part of college football to start the season this
week. Yeah, I got a little romantic about it on Wednesday night at the Woody Hayes on Snap Judgments, and then a little bit again on Thursday as we started talking about it on Three Things Thursday. This is a great opportunity for college football. It is a, it's a big moment for the sport to take away some of the focus from all of the extemporaneous stuff that happens, all of the nonsense around the sport, and just focus on what it's supposed to be. And it's the two of the proudest, most successful programs in the history of the game going at it head to head. I mean, even 3.5 weeks ago, listen to James Laurinaitis talk about it. And
that was how 3 weeks ago?
How he described it. Like, this game matters, and it's cool to be a part of a game that matters in the big picture of the sport, that maybe matters, and I hate saying it because I know that people don't like the idea that, oh, it's fine if you lose, because it's not fine if you lose. But it is nice to be a part of a game like this that is not going to eliminate you from all of your other goals. And I think that's one of the values of having this type of matchup early in the season. Last year when we were doing Bold Peas, we got into the habit of doing a score prediction at the start of the game.
We did? Oh, that was a long time ago.
If you recall.
I don't.
We got score predictions from us both at the live show at Roosters on Monday.
Okay.
Has anything changed for you?
No. Maybe I am set in my ways, Berm. Yeah, I think you know that about me after this long working together. Once I got this idea in my brain that this game was going to take some time for both offenses to find their footing, and I truly, truly believe that Matt Patricia and the talent that he has to work with on the Ohio State defense, that the Silver Bullets are going to be like incredible this year, and that to go out to an opener. So you have rust. The physicality of the game is tough to replicate in scrimmages, no matter how competitive and how much depth you have on your program. Like, to go out there and do that for the first time is going to be challenging, and I think Ohio State's going to make life difficult for everyone defensively. But we always say that even throughout a training camp, the offense is struggling to find its footing. Well, it's because the defense, it's like you're almost always ahead of where you are offensively. Yeah. And that's going to be the case, I think, for both teams on Saturday. Factoring in there the difficulties of breaking in Arch Manning and Julian Sain for the offenses, even when you go deeper into, like, is Texas going to be able to run the football? And the question has always been about, Ohio State's defensive line and the defensive tackles and the depth there and like the uncertainty about if the, like, all right, well, is Texas going to be able to move them with these new offensive linemen? And it, it seems like they're dealing with injuries on their offensive line. They don't know maybe who that starting group is going to be. They have veteran running backs, but the way that they've attacked has not always been like between the tackles. So like even a matchup like that, it is different. And I don't know
the other games within the game. Like it's fine if you can run between the 20s, but can you run inside the red zone?
Yeah, which they couldn't do the last time these teams played. So I think that I just think it's going to be a real physical rock fight and not different than the last time they played in the Cotton Bowl. So I think Ohio State is going to win this game 20-10. I know that you and Bob and Jay-Z are like, oh, if Ohio State gives somebody 10 points, like this game is going to be over and maybe it'll be lopsided. I don't know that that's the case. I just think that both programs are built in a way that it's going to be incredibly difficult to really put up a lot of points on Saturday.
Yeah, I said that on Monday at the live show at Roosters, in that if Ohio State only gives up 10, the defense has done such a remarkable job that I have a tough time not seeing the defense score a touchdown. So that gets me to like 27-10 if it's that sort of thing. But I don't see that. I think it's still going to be 17-13, 17-16, somewhere in that range. I just don't see either team scoring 20 points. I do think Ohio State's going to win. I'm going to take the Buckeyes 17-16. That is my final score prediction for this game. And it goes back to what I just said. I'm getting Texas to 16 points with 3 field goals. I think that they will have some luck moving the ball between the red zones, but I do believe that it will be a challenge, as we saw last year with everyone against Ohio State, but specifically Texas. They had to resort to the tight end or the running back out of the backfield, those sort of things to create mismatches. And I just don't know that Ohio State's going to fall for that again.
They had to really search for those. Yeah. Like, they couldn't just run the ball directly to Ohio State. They weren't having tremendous success just throwing to the wide receivers on Denzel Burke and Davis and Igbenosin.
They didn't have any success doing that. So Matthew Golden got hurt, and they were pretty much incapable of pushing the ball down the field. So it's all the quick stuff. It's what Sonny Styles talked about on Wednesday. It's misdirection. It's eye candy. It's trying. So as long as Ohio State's defense is able to stay disciplined, and that's where I think it gets interesting, Austin, is that this team is inexperienced, but they're not young. And so a lot of the things that might work against a young and inexperienced team, the eye candy, the motion, the orbits, and all that weird stuff that people are doing these days, I don't know that that's going to work as much against this team that has seen it all. These guys have played, they've been at Ohio State a long time. Just because they haven't been the everyday starters and the everyday players, the every down players, doesn't mean these guys haven't seen it, because they have. And they have the luxury of playing this game two games ago.
I found it kind of amusing to think about what you're talking about there in the search for matchups. And Steve Sarkisian is really proven, successful, prolific play caller. He's been that throughout his career, even if he's had some other issues running programs and all that. You always knew what those offenses were going to be capable of. And he found a way. He searched. This isn't working. This isn't working. And he got to this matchup and he isolated, you know, Sonny Styles and got running backs free out of the backfield in the passing attack. And like, so that became a question. Texas did this well in the Cotton Bowl, Sonny on Wednesday nights. Like, are you ready for that? Like, if you want to throw and Sonny and Arvell Reese, like Sonny with the safety background, he gave up a couple plays in that game. We've talked about that was still year one at linebacker. Yeah. That's not to make excuses. He got beat on those. He knows that.
Yeah, Texas has really good players.
But like trying to win, if Texas tries to win the same way and thinks that it's going to have the same success with the running backs against Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese, I personally don't believe that that's going to be a successful blueprint.
I think it's successful only if the guy's catching the ball in the end zone, because if you're letting these running backs get hit repeatedly by these two guys, then I think you are risking some long-term pain for yourself, because Sonny and Arvell and Peyton Pierce when he gets out there, and then you have Malik Hartford and Caleb Downs and Jalen McClain, like these are some thumpers. And it's not even like relegated to just those position groups, because Davis and Igbenosin and Jermaine Matthews are exceptionally physical cornerbacks, and they want to hit also. Yeah. So it's going to be a physical game. It's going to be a fun game. I think, you know, I'm not hip enough to say stuff like it's going to be a movie, but like it's going to be a movie. Ooh. Dog. You know what I'm saying? Let's go. Let's get it.
You're right. That wasn't hip.
Yeah. I tried though. What's your first?
Let's keep track of this though.
Sure.
Because you, based on the number as it sits right now, that's a Texas cover and the under. And I have Ohio State cover and also the under.
Sure.
We're both locked in there. All right.
I have a real tough time seeing this game getting over 45 points. And I don't, as we stand here on Thursday, I am not sure what the actual number is in the over-under, but in my mind, 45 seems like a real hard number to get over.
Yeah, I also just can't get over 2022 Ohio State.
Give me 35.5 and I think I'd take it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, again, 42 points were scored in the Cotton Bowl with two veteran quarterbacks on both sides.
And the fluke plays that pushed it from where it was.
Yeah, all right. So, all right, score prediction. And now bold prediction numero uno.
James Peoples will score two touchdowns, the only two Ohio State touchdowns of the game, as per my score prediction, 17-14.
All right, all right.
And lead Ohio State in rushing, and he will eclipse 125 yards on the ground.
125?
I know that's maybe not the boldest of all the bold.
Well, I'm just trying to...
Not a lot of spice in that pepper.
Trying to wrap my mind around your game script, where if Ohio State has that level of success running the football, I feel like more than 17 points are within reach.
I think you are obligated to prove you can run the ball in this game, and I don't believe that Ohio State will have any more luck in the red zone than Texas does. So I think James is the type of player that is going to be able to work inside and outside, which will be important against Texas, as we talked about on the Thursday edition of The Beat, that Texas is very, very good up front, but it is the middle of their defense, it is the middle of their defensive line that has a lot of guys that are trying to be replaced. And so I think that you're going to see him get going early and give me, I think he's going to have 22, 23 carries for 100.
Is he going to have the first carry?
Yes. I know there's a lot of talk about C.J. Donaldson, and I think he's going to play a lot. I think he's going to play a big factor. In this game, I think you have to put your best athletes out there and let them do special athlete stuff. And to me, that's still James Peoples. I say that fully acknowledging that I have not ever really been able to watch C.J. Donaldson in person. So I have seen James Peoples in person.
You've seen C.J. Donaldson.
But we've seen what he does against Ohio State in practice. I don't know how that translates on the field with athletes like Texas has on their defense.
All right, since you started with the rushing attack.
125 yards, two touchdowns for James Peoples.
I think I'll stay there, just so we don't have to circle back and have the same conversation again. Sure. My first bold prediction is that the team that gets to 100 rushing yards
first
will win the game. Doesn't sound like the spiciest pepper that's out
there.
No,
but I would actually, I mean, I'm going to retcon your, I don't think there's a scenario where both of these teams rush for 100 yards.
That's also what I mean. I don't think that Texas is going to rush for 100 yards. I brought this up earlier in the week, and I think it's worth reiterating. What Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloa, Tyleek Williams, and Ty Hamilton did better than anybody else in the country, why this was the number one defense in the country, was they knew how to stop the run, and they were invested in it. They spent 4 years plus in the Larry Johnson finishing school, where you have to stop the run first, and then you're allowed to go rush the passer. You put yourself in those situations, and then you earn the opportunity to go after the quarterback. They did that without fault. There were times, like, they were so good at it that they weren't, like, producing the sack totals that we wanted, and we took for granted maybe in some cases that you were not going to run the football. And now I remember, like, every time I'm sitting in the press box, I don't know if you ever had the feeling on the field, it's like teams would get into 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, 4th and 1, like, you're gonna try and run the ball in the middle of that defense, this drive is over for you, like, good luck, you just cannot do it. Teams that thought that they could move the football on Ohio State on the ground, it couldn't happen. Remember the buildup to the Tennessee game, and Tennessee fans somehow had convinced themselves that Ohio State's rush defense was vulnerable because of one or two plays that happened in the rivalry game.
Well, the difference is Michigan has no problem putting eight guys on the offensive line and eight guys in the box, and Tennessee wasn't. Texas isn't going to. If you want to run the ball against Ohio State, you have to do that with a loaded up group. You need to put an extra offensive lineman. You need to put a fullback in there. You can't just do it in 11 personnel.
You have to make a choice. Yeah. If that's the offensive identity you want, you cannot try to play it both ways, I don't think, against Ohio State. Michigan, the reason that it had success, and it wasn't tremendous success, the score of that game, Berm.
Yeah, I mean, they had one drive, and it was 8 minutes long, and they won the game with it, and that's what they had to do.
But you want to play a game, as you said, you want to get into 11 personnel and try and keep Ohio State off balance. Like, I don't think that's not going to allow your rushing game to thrive. I don't think you can win that way. But that is the challenge. Like, Ohio State, I don't have any concerns about their ability to generate a pass rush, whether that is traditionally with the four down, if we see more multiple fronts, if it includes CJ Hicks or Arvel Reese, which I expect it will, whatever, however it looks like, yeah. that Matt Patricia and Larry Johnson
want to generate. We fully expect that there will be more pass rush from the linebackers and the safeties and the corners than we've seen at Ohio State in the last few years.
But however that looks, they're going to get to Arch Manning in some way. If they have to manufacture it or if they just win matchups, I don't know what that looks like. I'm just not concerned about it. But to replace that run stopping production, I think, is the biggest uncertainty. But the reason that I still think Ohio State will hold Texas, maybe it won't be 58 yards like a year ago. Maybe I'll drill down and say it's going to be 79 rushing yards.
Yeah. Again, I think Arch will be their leading rusher. So that, to me, that's...
It's not ideal, though.
No, like, it's not ideal.
And if Arch has to run a lot, he's also going to be exposed to a lot more hits from an Arvel Reese, from a Davison Igbinosin, from a Caleb Downs, whoever. Like, guys who are going to make him question whether he wants to play football for a living.
I think that's a great idea.
So I think that... I believe Ohio State's going to do that again, and it probably won't look exactly the same. But the point is, Texas has just as much uncertainty about how they're going to generate those rushing yards, if it has to come from Arch Manning, if they trust these new offensive linemen to go move the line of scrimmage the way that a much more veteran group could not a year ago.
Yeah, and if Ohio State's going to win the rushing battle, if Ohio State's going to have James Peoples score two touchdowns and rush for 125 yards, Austin Saravelle is going to play a pretty darn big role in that.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Yeah. So I think maybe we should sprinkle a little magic dust on this here scenario, and let's go talk to Austin Saravelle for a minute about what it means to be a captain, what he's expecting out of this game, and see where else it takes us.
Let's do it. All right. How about a little special treat on a Freaky Friday on the eve of Ohio State, Texas? We have new captain, left tackle, Iron Buckeye. Am I missing? How many other, a dude of the week? And I forget all of your titles, but Austin Saravelle joining us for a couple of minutes to chat. First of all, congratulations on the honor. I know it felt to me like I've asked you about, I don't know, some of the other accomplishments, and you're like, well, yeah, I expected to do that. But still, once it happens, it's got to mean something to you. So congratulations. And when you got the latest one and became a captain, what was the reaction for you?
I mean, almost shed a tear a little bit. Definitely like shows all the hard work and that we put in, especially all four of us captains and the leadership role we all stepped in this year. And then like as a kid from Ohio, like being a captain means different to us. The Blocko, wearing Blocko just means different to us.
But what do you mean by that?
we got represent. It's different than some of these guys that are out of state and just the hard work, and we're just different people.
Oh, okay. So that means that you're a better captain than Brandon Ennis?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, I'm just teasing you. But that, I know what it means to you and all the work that you put in. When I talk about the Iron Buckeye stuff, it's like, you already know how much work you put into this. When somebody else is validating it, and as you said, lumping everything else in, like, I imagine maybe you'll have to look at it in 20 years that it'll mean more to you than it does now. But for your family and everybody else, I mean, there probably were tears there.
Yep.
How many?
I did get a lot of
two or three, and then he's done.
Yeah. A lot of family reached out, a lot of former coaches reached out, from like Iron Buckeye to the captain, and just all the support I had from back home.
You know, I think it's really fascinating with this team because you have Caleb Downs, who's a captain, everyone sort of expects that. You have Sonny Styles, who's a captain, everyone sort of expects that. Brandon Ennis, the way that he's led since he got here, I think people expected it. They all have very outgoing personalities, different ways. Sonny's growing into his, yep. But you have always been a guy that is very introspective, kind of keep to yourself. How hard has that been for you to unlock that other side of your personality? Because as a captain, there's 100 different dudes on this football team who are now turning to you as their example, and you have to be able to talk about it. How's that transition been for you?
Yeah, it definitely was a challenge for me. My first 2 years, I really didn't say much. I just went and just whatever they told me, I did.
Yeah.
And this winter, I stepped in that role. Coach Mick really challenged me over the spring and summer, and especially he helped me out. He really pushed me when I was doing his internship with him. So that really helped a lot. And then even this preseason, just taking that next step.
Is there a moment for you when you woke up one day and said, "Hey, I belong here"? And that's a question I ask every guy that ever comes through this place, because especially someone from a high school in Ohio that maybe you weren't the most outgoing person. And some of the doubts that you have are like, hey, am I good enough to play there? We've talked to you a lot over the last few years, but when was the moment that you realized that the things you dreamt about as a kid were actually within your grasp and that you could make it happen?
I think it was last year's camp, when Donnie was really pushing me, and he just sat down after practice a couple of times and talked to me, and he really just pushed me. And same with Coach Fry and Coach Mike and all of them, just really pushing me.
How did this camp feel different than there? I know there's 100 different ways you could answer this. Yeah, like there was no illness going through this, but you know, that was the first time on like day one. It's like, well, Austin, can you go play left tackle? And you did. And I know that was a key foundational block for you, but with that a year in the rearview mirror, what has this camp been like for you?
I feel like for me, definitely the coaching staff, we have four coaches, so a lot of eyes. So I get feedback on after every play. So that really helped. And I guess we were just so close up front. Like, I mean, we played all four of us, and then you put in the transfer, yeah, Ethan and Phillip. They were right there with us. So I feel like there was no like separation between all of us. We were just so close, and even outside of practice and the meeting room, like we were just all together.
Does it still, so you go in through a week or two and we start hearing, well, Austin Searle, we thought you were going to be at right tackle. Now you're a left, and that's where we expect to see you on Saturday at noon. And like last year, that was just, all right, well, somebody's got to do it. And now it's like you took that. Does that feel different to you?
I guess it was kind of funny. I think last year you guys asked me like, are you going to expect to play tackle in the spring or whatever? I'm like, no, there's no shot. And then here we are today.
I think it was wherever they need me, yeah, is what you're going to do, yeah, which is probably why, yeah, you're the captain. But
yeah,
wherever you need me is sort of the mantra of the offensive line group in the last 12 months, yeah, right? Like starting last August with the hand, foot and mouth disease, and everyone just moving around, and then Donnie getting hurt and Seth getting hurt and all and Josh getting hurt and all of the, I'm sorry, Donnie didn't get hurt. I take that back. Everyone knows what I meant.
He was hurt in camp.
He was hurt in camp. But now you have, as guys you mentioned, Phillip and Ethan coming into the program, fighting for a starting spot. Those two both arrive in December or January. Now, here we are, the day before this season opener, and one of them is not going to start. How much did last year's experience with what you had to go through, what Tegra had to go through, with Luke and Carson, how much conversation have you guys had with Ethan and with Phillip about, we're going to need you no matter what? So if you're number six, that's, yeah, fine. Like, yeah. Is that a tough conversation to have?
No. I think nowadays, I mean, you can see like how many other programs are rotating lines too, or like if something does happen, like everyone's cross training. Like there's countless programs where there's guys going left and right, inside and out. Like, so I think that's like the new modern era of being offensive line. You have to play more than just one position.
How do you have that conversation with a guy like Ethan, who comes in here and the widespread belief when he transferred is that he's just going to be penciled in at starting left tackle. Now you're playing left tackle, and he may not start. How did he take that?
I mean, you just got to tell him to trust the process. You never know when your number's going to get called. We say every day, competitive excellence. Like, you got to make the play when your number's called. You don't know when it's going to come, but you just got to be ready and stay ready.
All right. So, Austin, we talked a couple months ago, and I told you this was coming. You're going to be a captain. You're going to have to talk to the media again. I know it's not your favorite thing to do. Are you more comfortable when you go behind that door over there to our left and you're in the front of the team? Are you a more vocal? Berm said you're not outspoken. Will you do that with the team? And are you getting comfortable with this part of the job requirement?
I guess I am getting more comfortable with media as more I do it. It's kind of funny. Like afterwards, I go text my parents that I did so bad. Or like, it was pretty good. And like my brother gave me crap all the times. Like, why'd you answer? Like, you're awful, whatever he said. I can't say the word he could use.
Hey, life is about reps. I say this all the time. So you're going to get better at it. And we're going to, can see some of the bad shows we've done.
I wouldn't say I'm more vocal.
Like this one for me.
I wouldn't say I'm more vocal than I am right now. I'm just going to just be the person who I am.
Yeah.
How do you view this game? Like, I've been calling it, like, starting the season with the Super Bowl.
Yep.
At what point did the preparation feel different than it does for a regular season? I mean, you've played big games early in the season before, but this one feels a little different.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a matchup game for us. It's going to be a tone setter for what the season's going to look like for us. And, like, if we want to reach the goals at the end of the season, like, we have to win this game.
All right. You can go back to preparing for it right now. We've taken enough of your time. It's Ohio State captain, left tackle, Austin Searle.
We thank you so much for your time. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Back to the rest of Freaky Friday.
All right. Thanks again to Austin Saraveld. It feels like he was just such a shoe-in to be a captain that the surprise has worn off, but it is pretty remarkable that he's in that spot for Ohio State.
I don't like to keep bringing up like how quiet someone used to be, or like you were, you know, you weren't someone who wants to talk, but it's very important, because I've made this point in the past. I'll make it again. Like, these are 17, 18 year old dudes when they arrive at this football program. And we are very fortunate to actually get to watch people evolve into fully fledged adults. And now you start to see Austin Saraveld starting to come out of that shell and be a little bit more himself. And, you know, there's conversation we had with him before and after we recorded where you can see him starting to, like, be comfortable in his own skin. And I just think that that is so awesome that we get a chance to see that live and in person.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, he's going to be absolutely critical. We've broken down some of the, you know, roster impact here, what that means at left tackle. Deja vu's
weird, you know?
Yeah.
Just had, like, we've... Definitely.
Just right now?
Yeah, like that part about Austin Saraveld has happened in my brain before. I've dreamt it. I don't know when, but it felt like a long time ago. No, a long time ago. Like, this is... What do you think deja vu is?
A glitch in the Matrix.
America, I need your help. What do you think deja vu is? Is it a glitch in the Matrix? Is it some sort of, like, psycho... ability we have, some sort of psychosis, some sort of psychic, not psycho. Some sort of psychic ability that we have, that we all have, that we just can't.
You definitely have that psycho.
We don't know how to tap into it, and so sometimes it happens subconsciously.
Yeah.
Because that conversation we have 100% had verbatim in this exact location.
You, before. Me, and Austin Saraveld.
Yes. No, no, not the part with no us talking about. Austin Saraveld.
Oh.
After the... So, America, give me your thoughts on what
if you can find means. The clip of where this happened, also send it to Berm.
Yeah, because if it actually happened in real life, then I'm not psycho or psychic. But bold prediction number two is this. Julian Sain will throw for more yards than Arch Manning.
Okay.
And again, these are not... the spiciest of the peppers, but
let's put the cards on the table. It's a talent equated game. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be, as we're already halfway through bold predictions, a game where it's like, well, you know what, Kenyatta Jackson's going to have 17 right. sacks. Yeah. Like, it's not going to be one of those where it's
well, this that is would
not
make gonna your season long bold prediction yeah, really
I feel
easy.
Really great yeah. about it. But that's, I mean, like the real, like, exaggerated what's possible. Not yeah. that it's like. We don't ever try to make the bold piece impossible, yeah. but they're not going to be outlandish, because this game, like, if it's what we think it's going to be, it's not going to be a statistical barn burner.
Let's try to predict the line for Julian Sain. I'm going 16 completions out of 27 attempts.
16 for 27.
For 234 yards. That does not include a touchdown. As I've already said, there's only two touchdowns coming for Ohio State in this game as I see it. And one interception that will not come back to haunt him. It is not going to be a game that people are going to be like, wow, that was the best first start of all time. But I think it's going to show people things. And there's going to be a couple moments of one or two wild throws that people are going to glob onto and be like, whoa, if we can get that dude out of Ohio State and out of Julian Sain moving forward, this team is going to be A-OK. I think he's going to outthrow Arch Manning by about 60 yards.
I think
234 yards, 16 and 27.
I wasn't going to make one, but you challenged me to drill down on Julian Sain.
You have no choice.
19 for 31 for 223 yards.
Mm-hmm.
A touchdown that will go to Jeremiah Smith.
I've heard of him.
And I don't think he will throw an interception. No turnovers.
Okay. If Ohio State does not have a turnover from Julian Sain in this game, there is no way they lose it. Let's add a little spice to the pepper for this edition of Bold Piece and moving forward, and just say true or false.
Okay.
If Ohio State has a clean game, meaning no turnovers from Julian Sain, they win.
That's 100%
true.
That's going to be true from every game they play.
Do
so. There's no spice in that.
Ohio
pepper.
State needs a turnover for Arch Manning to win.
I think they're going to have to force a turnover, yeah.
So true, you say. True. He says true.
True, true.
True, true. You're a rock star.
Yeah, I can't get out of my head what we saw in the first 3 days, which again was so
far. That song was so much better. Like, I don't know if Kylie Minogue made other music, but that song was great.
I can't.
I'm sure she did make other songs.
Get it out of my head.
She's like Australian or something.
She is Australian.
I don't know why I said it in the past.
There was also...
She's still Australian.
Conversation about what the practices were look like. It was like, all right, short stuff, screens, close to the line of scrimmage, some of the slants that we saw, and then like, okay, short, chuck it deep,
yeah.
Bombs. Like no real in between, it feels like. And some of that I think will be designed to get not just Julian saying comfortable, not just into a rhythm, but like their higher percentage throws, the accuracy and processing, all those things that would highlight his ability. And also like in the short term, negate some of the risk.
Yeah.
And we'll see. That's why I think the completion percentage is probably poised to be pretty good for Julian Sain, and that the turnovers can be avoided. And then the yardage total, that will be for later.
Well, it's interesting because we heard from people earlier this week about how Ohio State's defense has been lamenting a little bit that like every third throw is a 50-yard pass down the sideline at Ohio State in practice over the last couple of weeks. So the thing is, if you made the decision that Julian Sain's your starter because of arm talent, because of his ability to make throws, the ability to quickly make a decision, like, I think you have to let him chuck it, you know? Like, that's the whole reason he's your guy. So I would be interested to see how that goes. I'm wildly fascinated with trying to figure out what Texas is going to do with Jeremiah Smith, because I don't see a scenario where they can try to bracket him with three guys like they did a year ago.
No.
And so that's just going to be really interesting to me. But and obviously that will determine, I think, some of Julian Sain's success and the yardage and the completion percentage, because obviously the more you go down the field, the lower your completion percentage is, but the more your yards go up. So it's going to be
quite... Are you saying there's a risk and reward factor?
I've never heard it put in those terms.
Uh-huh.
Risk and reward. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
So let's call it that. Let's say there's risk and reward that you have to try to balance and measure out when you're taking shots down the football field.
Okay.
Interesting terminology.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is a thinking show.
We're a thinking man's program.
Yeah, that's what we've always been accused of being. I said Ohio State will win if it generates a turnover from Arch Manning.
Uh-huh.
I think Ohio State's going to win, right? I established that at the start.
Yeah.
Who do you think I expect to get this turnover?
Let's see if you got that Matthews?
Psycho ability.
Would it be Jermaine
Matthews? It's Jermaine Matthews. Yeah. It's time for the Ghostface Killer to go out there and make Texas fans scream. He's
nice segue.
I heard an interesting conversation earlier this week. I'm not going to say where it was, Burn, but it was like Texas has got it in its mind that like Davis and Igbinosin can't cover people.
Well, they certainly haven't. I was actually going to bring that up because I saw a Texas blogger, whatever, talking about how Texas should throw at him, like just throw at him the whole game because he's gonna get penalized. Just keep doing it.
See, I don't think because
I hope Davison has seen that.
I bet he has. I actually asked some people after practice on Wednesday about some of the conversation coming from the Austin area, not from the Austin person in Columbus.
Now, this is also the Austin area.
Yeah. And they sort of they smirked, I'd say.
There's a little bit of disrespect coming from the Longhorn side.
Which is strange because I think they lost the last matchup. But anyway, it doesn't matter what the media coverage is like down there. Yeah. It doesn't matter what it's like right here. I don't believe that Steve Sarkisian thinks Davis and Igbinosin can't cover.
Yeah. Do you think that he didn't know that Davis and Igbinosin had all those penalties a year ago? How many times did they throw on him then?
I've heard an interesting, it's put in a different context recently that was like, Davison, his coverage ability is so good, and he plays obviously with a physicality that he gets the penalties because he's often in really good position. And whether you agree or don't agree with that, I don't know. There's no way for me to definitively prove that. I'm not a football coach.
Yeah.
Never have been and never will
if be. You're in the Texas
media, but my point is they're gonna throw on Jermaine. Yeah,
sure.
They're gonna pay for it.
But if you're in the Texas media and your whole offseason has been about trying to find these talking points for this game, How frustrating is it to know that every time you say something like Arch Manning, it would have been different if Arch had played, like we talked about it Thursday. Or, well, you know, they could just throw on Davison all game. Like, they just played and they didn't do these things. And Davison's still there. It's not like he got 17 penalties in the national championship game and all of a sudden there's a weakness exposed. Like, if they thought that that was a weakness for Ohio State, don't you believe they would have tried to exploit it in the Cotton Bowl?
Yeah.
You weirdos.
The way it's been talked about, this matchup nationally and in other places has been very strange.
Like, they
to me.
Just played. We saw how these teams match up. Like, they could have done this then. You know what?
This is just one of the returning pieces right. that they're talking about.
I'm tired of all the trash talk, except for when it comes from Brandon Ennis.
Oh.
I want to hear more Brandon Ennis trash talk.
It's almost, you're making it seem like you scripted the segues. Like, we don't script this show.
Did I or didn't I?
This is bizarre.
Yeah, baby.
Well, did you have like a psychic premonition of how the show is going to go?
Psycho premonition about how it's going to go. We did talk to Brandon Ennis as we talked with Austin Saraveld. We're going to show you that right now.
All right, completing our tour of the Ohio State offensive captains with Brandon Ennis. We already talked about Austin Saraveld, and he said it just means more for Ohio guys. That can't be right. I mean, should I know how much this means to you?
Yeah.
When you got that decision, I know you've been on the leadership council. We've talked about this over and over, dating back a year. You've been important to this team already, but when there are four captains and your name is called, what immediately hits you?
Excitement, honestly. Excitement was the first thing, and then just overall, like, gratefulness, honestly. It's a huge honor. I know what it meant for all them guys to vote me a captain, and the guys that was captains before me, their legacy that I'm taking on now is just a huge honor.
It's crazy. We're talking with Brandon Ennis, by the way. I think I just skipped right to the captaincy, but the way that this wide receiver room, and you know what the national perception is of that position, and Keyshawn's writing books about throwing in the damn ball and the diva stuff. There's a captain coming out of that room or a leader on this team like every single year to represent not just Ohio State as a whole, but then your position room. What does that part mean to you?
I mean, it's a blessing, honestly. Like Xavier Johnson, Cam Babb, and Mecca last year, just continuing that to almost tradition, you could say, at this point. Just continuing that, leaving that legacy that they left behind and continuing to grow from there is just a blessing.
How important is it as a receiver in this place to remind people that you guys aren't divas, that you are the group in this team that leads the way? Because you can look nationally, there still are a lot of wide receivers who are crying when they don't get the football. And at Ohio State, like, you've never started a game and you're a captain. Like, how insane is that to you? And how important has it been to just make sure people know that zone six is still what runs this place?
Yeah. I mean, we different. That's what I would say. We different over here. And we all want to see each other win at the end of the day. And that's why I think we not demons. We want to see each other win no matter who it is. And honestly, from years prior, you can see them guys from Jax, Garrett, and Chris. They want to see each other win to now us. And we just want to see each other win.
Who is the first of the former receivers to reach out to you when your captaincy was announced?
Former receivers?
Yeah, guys, former player. Guys that you played with.
Former player. Okay.
Sure.
Will Howard was the first.
Okay. Will Howard.
And then Emeka. And then Lathan Ransom. And then actually Terry McLaurin. After his contract extension the other night.
So let me ask you this.
He was busy up until then?
Had you think about how different your life – you would have played Texas a lot.
Yeah.
When you were committed to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And now here you are playing Texas two games in a three-game stretch.
Yeah.
What does this challenge present for you as a receiver group and for you, a guy making your first start in college football?
I mean, they have a great secondary. They have a great scheme. And we know what they're going to come to the table with. And it's a great challenge. When you come to Ohio State, you look for these games. This is a game you want to be in. And we ready for it. And we're going to play us.
Brandon, so I was joking, you know, about you have Sonny and Austin Saraveld, who are, you know, these Ohio guys. And they grew up wanting to wear the scarlet and gray and be a captain someday. For someone who comes from outside of the state, and we know how quickly you acclimated, how much it means to you. But when was the moment that you're like, well, this is home? Because you certainly had opportunities after year one, or, you know, at any point where you're like, I could leave. When did it become like this was your home and that it meant as much to be a captain and represent this program as it did to somebody who grew up with it their whole life?
Yeah, I would say, like, for them guys, I haven't watched Ohio State my whole life, so I know they probably have, and seeing them captains go out there every game and they probably went to some games. I don't know, but them seeing that, I know it probably felt different, but it feels different for me too, honestly. And then just
how so?
Just because the legacy that the captains leave behind, and how people remember you as not just a player but a person as well. And I feel like that's a real difference right there. Like everybody in the building congratulating me after that and stuff like that. They really know how hard I've worked, and it felt amazing.
I don't know that you're like, because you haven't started a game yet at Ohio State.
How many times are you going to tell him that?
I think it's important that he remembers.
I think he knows.
It's important that he remembers it. When you go out there,
you can leave at any
time.
There's
a lot of people who just don't know who the hell Brandon Ennis is. I have said for years that you are the most competitive high school football player I've ever seen. And do I say that all the time about Brandon?
That's correct.
I've never seen.
You also say he's never started a game a lot.
Well, I only say things that are true.
It's true.
I have never seen a high school football player who was more competitive than you. And most of the time that was in 7-on-7 settings.
Yeah.
Does that come from? Like, why is that in a part of you? And who is responsible for it? And how can we send them a thank you basket of fruit?
The fruit. Honestly, I just hate losing. I don't know really where it comes from, but ever since I was little, I just hated losing. I was always on like winning teams. I've never had a losing record. Like I've been to Little League Super Bowls, won a state championship in high school. Like I've done all these things, and I just feel like I hate losing. I hate losing more than I love winning. So that's really where I think it comes from. And anything there's a competition with, I'm trying to win, and I'm trying to be the best at it.
I don't think I've asked you this, Brandon, but like, there's this sense from some of the guys who weren't frontline starters. We know how important you were last year. Like some people have said, well, that is that team's championship ring. You have one. You got all the jewelry. You were a key part of it, the touchdown against Penn State. We know all that. Is there any part of you that's like, now I need one in a different role, a more prominent role, whether that's captain, just starting, whatever?
Honestly, yeah. Like, honestly, it is. And I've thought about that, honestly. Like, last year, like, that was – our team, but I wasn't starting. And I've thought about them things like Emeka, man, like just seeing him like cry after the game. Like, I don't know, that it really hit me. Like, now I'm like, damn, I need one like that. And I was like, so again, it felt great, but
yeah,
when I get one when I'm starting, I know that'll feel different.
Well, you have to go through bad things exactly. to really appreciate exactly. the good things. Like, you used to have to wear number 11, right? Which you didn't like. Now you get to wear number one.
Yeah.
How much of a fight was there to get the number one? Or did everyone know that Brandon's going to take it when Quinshon leaves and there's no discussion?
Honestly, it was not very much fight. I just wanted Coach Day. I was like, what's up, Coach? He's chilling. And then I was like, I feel like Kai get number one. He's like, oh, he smiled, laughed about it a little bit. He was like, oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll oh, you that like in. That, do you?
He was like, it matters yeah. what number you wear.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were wearing the sticks before, which yeah. is why you were out there just being a physical you know, blocker and doing all that dirty yeah. work. And now you wear the Diva's number. You can demand the football and a start.
Yeah. And a start. That's
you, funny. You just had to add that on there. How excited are you guys just to go out and play not Davison Igbinosin and Jermaine Matthews Bro. And Caleb Downs?
I mean, we ready. We need to see some other competition. And what a great opportunity in this first game, the biggest game of the year. Yeah. And we ready.
Yeah, we can't wait to watch. Excited for you to get that first start.
I as have Burn to ask has one more question.
Oh, you do?
Do you have, this is your opportunity, Brandon, to talk to every Ohio State fan in the country who's watching this episode of The Beat on Freaky Friday. What's your message for Ohio State fans heading into Saturday, Friday night in Columbus?
Saturday, one, be loud as you can if you go into the game. We need it. We need them to be on a silent cadence. We need it. They're going to have some new towels or something, I heard. I want to feel the shoe rocking. That's what I want to feel. And then if you're watching on TV, we can feel the energy through the screen. So just be loud. And then if we messing up at first, don't get on us, man. We're going to get it right. We're going to win the game. That's all I say.
All right. A little bit of a warning there just to ride with them through. Like, there were some ups and downs last year.
Hey, up on top. Exactly.
It's going to be a journey, and it starts on Saturday at noon.
Yes, sir.
For Captain Brandon Ennis, congratulations again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Enjoy that first start, and Berm will be out of things that he can say.
I'll have to come up with a whole different talking point.
Something new as we get back into that. So thanks to Brandon Ennis for joining us, and back to the rest of Freaky Friday on The Beat. Did you get your dose of trash talk there?
Yeah, it was good.
Did you know that it's Brandon Ennis' first start on Saturday?
Believe it or not, I did. I don't mean to – I just don't know if he understands how – unusual that is to be a captain. Like, we've seen guys like Cam Babb be a captain who didn't play Court Williams because of injury. But for a guy who's not been injured, who came in
And like the narrative about him was that he was just going to end up transferring and he didn't really want to be there. Like what a remarkable story Brandon Ennis is, and the opportunity to see him work now as a full-time receiver at Ohio State. People are going to be reminded why, like, before Jeremiah Smith existed, all of the conversation about South Florida Express and what like a Florida receiver was going to look like was about Brandon Ennis. And if you look at him physically, like the baby fat that he had as a freshman, like all that stuff is gone. He's just exactly what you want out of a teammate and a football player. And I'm excited for it.
I would love at some point after Brandon Ennis's career is done to be like, hey, can we see some of your like DMs or random text messages that you got from people around the coaching college football sphere? Because
I would love to see
the number of people that were thinking that there would be an opening to pry Brandon Ennis away when Emeka Egbuka, like, I'll focus it. Let's do a search history down for like the 48 hours after Emeka said he was coming back to Ohio State.
I bet the FOIA on that would be amazing. Like,
I'm not going to FOIA Brandon Ennis.
Do you remember, I did a story.
Also, we can't. He's a private
individual. What was it? 2019, I think. I did a story on September 1st when recruits were showing me their DMs from coaches around the country on September 1st, the first day they were allowed to be contacted. I would love to see the tampering files.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Third
bullet. But again, it's kudos to Brandon Ennis for sticking through that. And everyone, I've made this point, doesn't matter. If you wanted to leave, if the opportunity was better, if it was money, if it was opportunity, playing time, everybody's got to make their own choice for their career path. Brandon Ennis wanted to play at Ohio State. When he made that choice, he wanted to play for Brian Hartline. He wanted to get developed. And if he didn't firmly believe in that, he wouldn't be a captain for this team.
And he hasn't looked back. And he walked in day one and immediately put forward the energy that people expected out of him. He has been a leader since he got here. It doesn't need to be a captain to be a leader. And he has earned that C. You know who's earned some playing time? Some PT? Earned some reps? Earned some opportunities? Peyton Pierce.
The Texas Tornado, bro?
The Texas Tornado, bro. And I'm going to tell you what. I don't think it was the Longhorns, when speaking of tampering, who were really doing the most work to try to bring in Peyton Pierce.
They did some.
They certainly did some. Let's just say that they did some. I think the rest of the majority of that might have been coming from a little oil town in Texas. And I ain't talking about Waco. But it matters for a kid like this to be able to play against the Texas Longhorns. Like Peyton Pierce, I'm sure if we pinned him down and said, hey, did you grow up rooting for this team?
I don't think you can pin down Peyton
probably
Pierce.
Probably not. I'm not going to try. But I'd imagine he would say that this is a team he grew up rooting for and really dreaming of playing for. The opportunities he's going to have on Saturday.
How many?
I don't know exactly how many snaps he's going to get. That's the challenge. But I'm going to say, and it's a bold prediction, but is it the boldest of peas? I don't know. America, you decide. Peyton Pierce will lead Ohio State in tackles for loss on Saturday.
Whoa.
With like three.
Tackles for loss.
I see him as a come in the game, shoot the gap, make a play. Like the play that Caleb Downs made to on the Sawyer Soup and the play before the Sawyer Scoop and Score.
The Soup and Scoyer.
The Soup and Scoyer, of course. That sort of diagnosing ability, that sort of ability to see what's going on and shoot through a gap and make a hole and make a tackle in the hole, that's what he's going to do. He is going to have limited opportunities because Texas's offense is certainly not going to be the big set that we're going to see out of Wisconsin or Illinois or whatever. But when he's in the game, he is going to make plays. I guarantee that.
Okay.
And I'm going to assume he's going to have double-digit plays in this game because, as James Laurinaitis has said, he's a starter. I don't think this is a situational revolving door with the linebackers. I think he's going to play in whatever setting they're in. And so he's going to lead Ohio State with three tackles for loss.
That's interesting because
boldest of all the P's thus far.
I might have to raise you on that one.
Oh, Lord.
Because I had a different defensive weapon had earned playing time.
My psycho abilities knew this was coming.
Who I think could match the tackle for loss total that you talked about. And it may be sprinkled in with 1.5 sacks, bordering on 2 full sacks. Because if what we're talking about, go back to the run game, and Texas has to throw, and they want to be in 11 personnel.
Sure.
That, to me, is begging for the opportunity that C.J. Hicks has been begging for a long time. So, I don't think he's going to play more than, like, 20 snaps.
Yeah, if C.J. plays 20, I will be pleasantly surprised.
But I think in the right situations, in the personnel groupings, in the scenarios where Matt Patricia, like, we've made this point, the communication, the relationship, the bond, I think the belief from Matt Patricia in C.J. Hicks and vice versa, it's real. It seems real. I guess we're going to find out on Saturday if that's going to carry over into real games and not just practices and camp season and all the other things. I believe there's an actual desire to not just say C.J. Hicks is going to be unleashed, but like find a way to truly do that. I honestly think that's going to happen. And I think he's going to, the fact that C.J. Hicks is not going to be asked necessarily, at least in my mind, to play 30, 40 snaps is going to allow his upside, his potential, his game wrecking ability to actually be showcased. If you just say 10 or 15 times, go run at Arch Manning, or, you know, here's the blitz package, like whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to put him in ability to have, like, it may be 5 tackles, but like all of them are probably going to be really influential.
So what's the bold prediction?
3 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, and I guess 5 tackles total.
So are you boldly predicting mm-hmm. that CJ is the sack leader on Saturday with number?
He's going to be both.
How many sacks of Arch Manning will there be total for Ohio State?
I believe there will be 4 sacks.
4 sacks. So, and if we drill down there, you're giving 1.5 to CJ. That means 1.5 to Kenyatta, and then you're giving 1 up the gut from one of the guys, from Edrick or Caden?
That will be Edrick Houston. All this talk about the defensive tackles, like Ohio State has the high-end ability of Caden McDonald and Edrick Houston. If you turned off fatigue,
man, that'd be great.
You'd take Ohio State against Texas interior offensive line.
If you could turn off fatigue and injuries, this would be just one hell of a game to watch for a couple hours. It's going to be one hell of a game either way.
You'd simulate it on the college football game.
Either way. We got a lot of stuff going on Friday.
We sure do. Run it down.
We're going to leave this beautiful area. Just kidding. This is being recorded on Thursday, just so you know. We're going to be at the
full
Horseshoe.
Disclosure.
Horseshoe, 8:45 a.m. on Friday. We will be live on 10 TV.
We will be.
We will be.
They don't know what they're getting.
We don't know what they're doing or asking, but they don't know what they're getting either. And that's where the fun really happens. Then, 2:30-ish on Friday, we're going to be at the O on Lane, which is...
We went down there earlier on Thursday. Just check it out. It's over there, Berm.
It's over here. It's over there. We're going to be at the O.
Is this a new bit, or do you just like not know directions?
I actually
have driven with you before. I know you don't know this.
We are going to be at the O on Lane around 2:30. We're going to be talking to fans. We're going to be doing a show there. That'll be live streamed on 97.1, the Fan's YouTube channel.
Got some insight on that. We will have a microphone that they can pass around in the crowd if you want to come hang out with us in the O on Lane. There's also going to be 97.1, the Fan shows there all day long, including the trivia contest before we take the stage. Again, the Fan, they don't know what they're getting out of this either. If you want to send in, you can't be there, and you have a question for us that we haven't got to, the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com, the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. You can send that in there. If you do come down, there'll be microphones. You can ask the question to us live if you want. Don't have to do that if you don't want to either. We'll gladly just hang out before or after, whatever, and shake some hands and kiss some babies if we need to.
I don't want to kiss your baby.
We won't kiss babies then.
Then it's game day.
So we'll have pregame keys.
Pregame keys about 9:30 a.m.
Doesn't
on Saturday.
Seem like the availability report's going to be all that.
Yeah, I think we should be good. So
don't know. But we never know.
9:30 a.m. ish on Saturday, we'll have the pregame keys on YouTube on 97.1 and 10 TV. And then it's game time. We've talked all we could talk about it.
Have we?
Let's go.
Because you just said that we have like 3 more shows to do before.
Oh, crap. What are we going to talk about then?
That's why we need your help, America.
We have to go so we can figure that out.
We do?
Yeah, we should probably leave.
Okay. Well, we sincerely appreciate everyone following along at 97.1 The Fan on that YouTube channel, 10 TV's YouTube channel. That seems like it's been another option people have been enjoying recently. Thanks for everyone watching both of those places. 10 TV Plus, where this supersized edition is living. And if you need the audio only version, Apple, Spotify, or the, what are the other podcasts? I don't even know them.
I don't even know if any others exist anymore.
I don't know. Wherever you get them.
They're out there, though.
You can find them. We hope you have a awesome Friday, whether you come hang out with us or not. We appreciate you watching. And then we will see you all for the season opener on Saturday at noon in the Horseshoe. Ohio State and Texas is almost finally here, and we're going to have a game to break down. We couldn't be more excited for it. Thanks for following along with both me, Austin Ward, and him, Jeremy Birmingham, on the Austin and Berm Show. It's been a Freaky Friday edition. Thanks to Austin Saraveld. Thanks to Brandon Ennis. And thanks to you all. See you later.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart. Yay, yay, yay.